I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Stay tuned following Jeremy and you're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Derek and Zach. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Good morning, everybody.
Hey,
happy Thursday. It's beautiful outside today. I don't know if it's going to get humid, though. I didn't feel that yet this morning. But it is very, very nice out. The lawn's got to get mowed this weekend, though. The little bit of rain we have gotten has caused the lawn to have to get mowed.
Okay, Dad.
It's going to happen this weekend. I mean, it's all right. The lawn's got to get mowed now. That's all right.
Thanks, Dad.
Talking with Patrick Hammer last week, I hadn't realized how long it had been. And he was like, yeah, like you've noticed you haven't mowed your lawn. And it struck me like lightning. I was like, you're right. It's absolutely correct. I should have known.
It's going to be kind of humid at points today, but can we just stop with that part, the humidity? I don't care about anything else.
The humidity, I was going to say, I'm a big heat guy, but the humidity can calm down.
Yeah.
Just a hair. Just a little bit.
That's all I want. I'm not asking for much.
Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. We are getting close, though. Tomorrow begins the Premier League. I know a lot of people in Western New York do watch English soccer. I am one of them. I do not need to find a Premier League team like one Owen Parker. I already have my team, sadly. I didn't even try to push my team on him because that is my cross to bear, not his. He does not deserve that.
And what is your team, you?
West Ham.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I think one, Brian Mazurowski is also a West Ham supporter as well. I think he's been longer than I have, though. Like, I'm 2014, 2015-ish is when I jumped into that because of the World Cup in Brazil. That's kind of what got me into soccer, and I went that way. I think he's been longer. So it's even more of a cross for his to bear. But I was not going to put that
on. So they're just, like, not ever that good?
No. They're very rarely super good. When I got into them, though, funny enough, because the Bills are getting a new stadium, they were getting a new stadium, and it was supposed to be this big thing. It's the London Stadium. They just had it in the 2012 Olympics, and it was going to be this big deal. 60,000-person-seater, and it's going to put them over the top. They were going to become one of these big teams in England. They're already in London, right? That has not been the case. They have had periods of success, but oftentimes it is then followed by a period of very little success and the fear of relegation. They did win a trophy in this time, which has been cool, but it's the Europa Conference League, which is like the third tier of European soccer, like these like other tournaments they do, which I've always kind of enjoyed. And now they're expected to potentially get relegated this year. So I was not going to put that on Owen. Like Josh is trying to get Owen to be an Everton fan, and I'm like, don't do that, man.
What a fall from grace for the antagonists of Ted Lasso.
That was my favorite thing in Ted Lasso. So I'm like, they're making West Ham the villains. Of all the teams,
we're picking West Ham, baby.
In real life, Ted Lasso takes over a team like West Ham and is like, yeah, bring them up. And in this, they're like, no. Rupert's office is going to look like the Death Star. That's how evil they are. Incredible. That show's coming back for a fourth season.
It is.
I don't love that.
I don't either, but also they did kind of hit on all cylinders before.
I mean, it was a really good show. I enjoyed it. I will never say it was one of my favorites of all time. I think it's a really good sports show. I didn't love the ending. I thought the ending became a little too, oh, this is too perfect kind of deal. Mm-hmm. But it ended on such a note where I'm like, you know what? That fits the tone. And then they kind of set up they were going to do, you know, a spinoff, and that was exciting. And now it sounds like they're not doing that.
Now, hang on. What do you mean that sounds too perfect? Sometimes sports stories really are. Okay, even Hollywood couldn't have written that script.
No, I mean, that's right. But, like, it got to, like,
so I don't want to hear it.
Ted never became, like, a good coach. And then, like, he eventually became, like, he discovered a tactic in soccer that had been used forever and it works because Jamie Tartt's there. It was a bit much. It was a bit much. Again, I liked it a lot.
You need the right personnel for the system.
Right. I liked it a lot. The first season, I think, is genuinely great.
Or you
television.
Need the right system for the personnel, and that's what he figured out.
He's the epitome glue guy coach.
He's the glue guy coach.
He brings the best out of everyone, and that's what makes them a good team. He doesn't need to know tactics.
I guess he would be the glue guy. The problem is, like, that's usually, like, your third string right guard is your glue guy. Like, you're not going to see the field, but, like.
Does he make the team good?
His pregame speeches are immaculate.
Yeah. So does it matter how he gets there?
No, it's fair.
He's a motivator.
I guess he is the glue guy.
He's a motivator.
Yeah.
He's a motivator.
Yeah.
That's an archetype in college football.
Yeah. No, I guess he is a motivator. I the season four, he's going to, not to spoil the show, but like.
Don't spoil the show. Don't do it.
It ended in a way where it's like, okay, Ted's story's done. Cool. And they're like, no. We like money.
We like money. Yes, that is exactly why, by the way.
And I'm looking so little forward to it. It's going to happen. The season will pass by, and I'll be like, oh, that happened? Interesting. Which is sad. I really did like that show.
It is. It's a money thing. It's a cash grab. Most comebacks of shows and IPs and movies,
right.
Like, that's usually how it goes, is we like money, and we know people are
going to
buy it.
Yeah.
Even if it's potentially bad.
Even if it's going to almost definitely be bad.
But that's how it goes, and that's on my generation. We kind of buy into the nostalgia thing too.
The nostalgia is hard, yeah. Although,
like,
some...
I remember this thing when life didn't stink all the time.
But then every now and then, though, you get one that hits. Top Gun Maverick was an absolute callback to, you remember this movie you loved back in the 80s, like, we're going to bring it back. And everyone's like, this is actually awesome.
But again,
isn't it Tom Cruise's, I think, highest grossing movie ever? Good for him.
But very rarely
is
the payoff as good as the potential.
Yeah.
And that's something that, like, why do you think there's so many remakes done nowadays?
Mm-hmm.
It's to grab people my stinking age and we go, oh, I remember that. That's cool.
Yeah.
Hey, remember pogo sticks?
We're going to bring them back.
We're going to bring them back. I don't know. I don't know if they've actually brought back pogo sticks. They ever died?
Were they ever a thing? I mean, that's the real
question. The poll. Was pogo sticks ever a thing?
Was it ever actually popular?
Don't put it on the poll, Josh.
Speaking of payoffs and potential, though, we did get the news yesterday. James Cook gets his contract, 4 years, $48 million. Although we eventually now got more of the details via SpotTrack.
We did get the details now. And
SpotTrack has it at 4 years, $46 million. And I will say, an interesting note on the James Cook extension. It sounds like of the almost $30 million he'll get, it's about 28.8. It sounds like he's getting 25 of that. Within the next year.
By March.
Yeah. He gets 15.2 guaranteed at signing. And then this is, again, via SpotTrack, Mike Jannetty. He's going to get around 10 next February, March, around that area. And so most of his contract.
Most of that guaranteed money, it's already paid out. And most of that contract, you're right, is able to be a cut bait contract.
And so on that, and Mike and Chris brought this up yesterday, too. It's like, it's weird to, like, look at a contract and go, when's the soonest I can get out of it? Like, that's never a right way to look at a contract for any sports player. You should be just excited you have them and moving on, where now I think many of us have gotten to, show me the details. I want to know how bad this is going to hurt in 3-4 years. But for the Bills with James Cook, the dead cap hit this year is the worst. He's not going to get cut. Next year, it's 9.6. And then it drops aggressively, 11.3. And then now, in 2 years... $8 million and then 4.7. I mean, they really front loaded this contract so that it's kind of essentially a 3-year deal.
And that's how you kind of want to play it. And that's something we were bringing up yesterday of, if this is effectively a 3-year deal, you can move on because of how volatile the running back position can be for a player. We saw and continue to see players that hit age 28, 29, and they fall off of a cliff.
Yep.
Very rarely do you get someone that's a success story into their 30s. Derrick Henry, 31, is probably your rare case right now. And even then, no guarantee he stays that player for the next 3 years.
He has become a little bit of a Tom Brady, though, where we're all expecting the fall off, and he just kind of refuses to have it. I don't know how long that'll last, but also you look at Derrick Henry, we all get it. He's 6'3", 230. He's not built like every other running back. That's the big thing for him. Barkley is sort of the one I look at and go, man, is he really going to keep going? He's a physical athlete, don't get me wrong, but he's also, yeah, like he's a top five running back pick. He's not the physical, like you say with Henry, he's built in the lab. I mean, you don't get that guy.
Test tube baby.
Yeah, you don't get him every once in a generation. I mean, he's once every 35 years. You get that kind of player,
that kind of build, that kind of physical player, mm-hmm. at a position that demands physicality. He brings it to you.
Yeah.
And he's still great. It's like, okay, that's cool. And you see how quickly a career like Todd Gurley's went away from him. And you're just like, all right, it's clear that somebody had to stand the test of time.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, ready? We're talking about Derrick Henry. He's 31. That tells you the point about running backs in its entirety right there. He's 31, and we're talking like, oh, he has been here forever doing this. No, it's just the possession.
Yeah, he's been in the league only since 2016. It really has not been that long.
And that's the position. That is running backs.
Mm-hmm.
That is how it goes, is that we're marveling that someone is still at the top of their game at 31 years old.
What's crazy, too, so it just real quick on Henry here. What's really crazy about him, his first 2 years in the league weren't all that impressive. The Titans hadn't figured out how to use him. So in the quote-unquote best years to use a running back, they weren't.
They didn't.
They didn't do it well. They eventually figured out his third year. He goes over 1,000 yards, 12 touchdowns. Then you start to see the Derrick Henry, we all know, 1,500 yards, 2,000 yards. Drops off a little bit because he only plays 8 games in 21. But then he's right back.
And still almost gets 1,000 yards.
Yeah, he's right back to it. He has not had under double-digit touchdowns since his second year in the league. Last year, he goes off for over 1,900 yards. If he would have hit the 2,000 mark, he would have been the first running back to do it twice, right?
Right.
I believe that's right, yeah. But even then, you never know when the cliff's going to come for him. Saquon Barkley, this year, we have no idea what's going to be for him. He had the most touches of his career last year since his rookie year. His rookie year, he had 352 touches because obviously he's both a receiving and running back. Last year, he had 378.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we mentioned that number yesterday, the 370 mark.
Which Henry has hit that, and then he missed half the season.
Mm-hmm.
So like, even Derrick Henry was not able to omit from the curse of 370.
His 2,000-yard season, he had 397, and then, yep, misses most of the season.
Yeah, misses half the year the next year. Still almost gets to 1,000 yards, so how cursed was he really?
Well, I mean,
but he was injured.
But then even the year after that, he hits 382, goes for 1,500 yards, but then it drops the next year. He goes for 308 total touches, and he drops 400 yards rushing. Last year, he goes back up to 344. But he is sort of the marvel. And the thing is, too, that's not even who to, like, put James Cook in the same category as.
Correct. We're just talking about the player that...
The fear was, though, if they paid him $15 million, well, now this is who we have to talk about. This is who we have to compare him to. Instead, he hits around 11.5 is actually his average salary per spot track. And so on that, he's more around the Kyren Williams, Josh Jacobs sort of mold. You know, he is the guy that only gets about 48% of the touches, or 48% of the snaps, excuse me. And it does not sound like, we talked with Sal yesterday, Brandon Bean spoke, it does not sound like just because they paid him, they're going to use him more. They want the role he does, the role he has on the team, they just want him to keep doing it and perhaps get even better at it, right? Maybe have a few more explosive runs, maybe break more out in the passing game. But ultimately, what they're asking him, they want him to do. It's just, it is curious to me, and this is something I like. And I mean, we could go back into the other contracts they've signed this year. I haven't necessarily looked at all of those a ton, but this is something unlike the Eagles do, where it's a lot of cash up front so that you can absorb the dead cap hits later on, where all of a sudden they become much more manageable. I mean, you see here, it's an $8 million cap hit if they cut him in 2 years, but that's like a disaster scenario they do it. If they do it in 3 years, it's super manageable.
Yeah. And that's exactly what you think the contract is going to be at, I would say, the whole time, because you consider how much of the money is guaranteed on a four-year deal like that. Before we even got the details, we were kind of leaning into, this might be effectively a three-year contract.
Mm-hmm.
Because most NFL contracts seem to work that way, where you can cut bait in that last year, typically. But it's the volatility of the running back position to where, yeah, this is effectively a three-year deal. The term then doesn't entirely kill you. Mm-hmm. Not that 4 years would.
No, and that's right. And we mentioned that. This was never going to be an albatross or an anchor contract for the Bills where they're just like, we can't get out of this. Like this is absolutely hamstringing them to what they want to do. It won't. I know we do look at guys like Curtis Samuel in terms of his $7 million cap hit. That's kind of been a hit for them. That's more a hit towards the end of free agency where they maybe want to do some things with guys being available on the trade block, what have you, that they kind of can't.
Mm-hmm.
But we also wouldn't be having these conversations about Samuel if he stayed healthy. Same will be true of James Cook. If he stays healthy, we're not going to have a lot of these conversations. They'll be just fine. They'll be able to add more guys. I do wonder, though, if this will cause them to have some tough decisions about the interior of their offensive line with McGovern, Torrence, Edwards. I mean, what is that going to do for them?
You might need to replenish via the draft very quickly, very capably. And that's the other part, capably.
Yep, and McGovern is also on the last year of his contract. I mean, that's where Joe jokingly said, like, wouldn't it be funny?
No, well, not at all.
But it is a conversation we will probably have to have in the next few months of, are they going to bring back McGovern? Or was the hope going to be having Cedric Van Pran Granger eventually take over the role?
Be ready in the wings all along.
Mm-hmm. Which for many people, even last year, had that feeling because we didn't know what McGovern was going to be at center, obviously, with Mitch Morris leaving. I know there were conversations amongst Bills fans of like, is he going to take over sooner rather than later?
Is that the draft starts?
Yeah. Now we don't really know. Van Pran Granger has not practiced at all in training camp. I think it's a calf injury that he's had. And so we really have not been able to see him at all. But perhaps that's been the Bills' big plan all along is ultimately we're going to let McGovern walk because we have a guy in-house who for 2 years would have been working with Aaron Kromer, who's worked wonders for them on the offensive line, not even just with the starters, but the backups as well, and he slides right in. We'll see if that still is the case, but they've also got other guys that they've drafted, you know, that are, I don't want to say waiting in the wings because maybe not true, but that they always have depth. They have depth that maybe one of the most important groups an NFL team can have, which is the offensive side of the trenches. Now they've done the same on the defensive side as well. We're going to see how much that hits for them this year. And for me as well, and I was having this feeling yesterday with the Cook stuff. Like as important as it was, as much you know conversations as it got to, it was always at most just an annoyance to me. I never thought Cook would miss games, especially with how he was handling himself. I never really was banging the drum to you need to pay a running back. If anything, I was quite the opposite. But I got to there yesterday. I'm about a 6 out of 10 on it. I'm above average. It's fine. He is their biggest playmaker outside of Josh Allen. They need him there. But for me, like the big storyline for most of this offseason has been the defense, has been the defensive line, has been the safety room. And it still holds true today. I'm like, I think the offense will be fine. To me, it has always now still been about the defense.
What's the line I said yesterday? Back to your regularly scheduled programming. Yeah.
So I'm right back to like, okay, what is TJ Sanders doing? Is Cole Bishop healthy? Is Deion Walker still looking like a bit of a force as a fourth round pick? What's Landon Jackson doing? Bosa, is he healthy?
Trey White able to hold it down? When can we see Harrison back? Everything that we have questions about is on the defense.
Mm-hmm.
Is Matt Milano back to his usual wrecking ways? These are all defensive questions. Like, I'll yield one question to the wide receiver position of who is going to be the next player to step up this year.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the only question now that you have on the offensive side of the football? Yes. Well, the other might be, can Dalton Kincaid improve on his numbers?
But to be fair, that's the wide receiver room as a whole. They've always treated Kincaid as one of their receiving weapons.
So ready? That's it. That's the only question that I have. Because Kincaid can then fall into the who steps up on the receiving end this year. That's it then. Cool. That's the only question that you have on the offense. The defense has too many of them. And they took this offseason and acted like they had a bunch of questions on defense.
Yeah, they tried to answer as many as possible. Yeah.
They acted like a team that knew they had questions to answer, and they are trying to find those answers. And it's still to a point where the popular thing when these two players asked for trades. It makes way more sense for the Bills to add Micah Parsons versus Terry McLaurin.
Mm-hmm.
Even after all the changes that they've made on the defense this year, it still is the question that you answer with, yeah, you know, the Bills should still go get the pass rusher.
Yeah, that's been the dragon they've been chasing for years.
Kind of the Achilles heel of this team with this regime is that they have not been able to get the top-end pass rusher. And the one that they do throw a bunch of money to in a reactive state looks the part until he gets hurt. So even bad luck has chimed in on the search for the pass rusher, the defensive end.
Mm-hmm. In 11 games played that year for Von Miller in 2022, he had 8 sacks. He had 10 tackles for loss, 12 QB hits. He was the part that you wanted. I mean, that's the shame of it. They did get it right. They paid a lot of money to get it right, but they got it right, and then he got hurt.
And then he got hurt, and then it became very wrong, unfortunately, very fast for them. Mm-hmm.
Which is, to be fair, true of most contracts. You pay with the hope that they don't get hurt. If they do and they miss a lot of game time, then it hurts. That's when it stings. You can usually live with bad contracts because you're getting great players. We all said it when Von was signed. It didn't matter if they won a Super Bowl. And to start that year, what did they have against the Rams to start the year? Like 5 sacks? I mentioned, too, Rousseau breaks out in his second year with Von Miller helping out. It looked perfect.
It looked like it was going to be the piece that they needed until...
But now they're back to the drawing board. They get Joey Bosa. He looked very good in his first preseason action. Not a ton, but individually he looked very good. And that's a big thing with the preseason as well. We try to look much more individuals rather than the Bills on conversion downs, fourth and third down combined, going 11 of 19 defensively on those conversion downs. They were horrific as a team. But individually, TJ Sanders looked very good. Deion Walker looked very good. Michael Hoyt and Joey Bosa looked very good. Matt Milano. Right back to where...
Looks like he's right back to where he should be,
you know,
could be.
The one I'd maybe be worried about is, are they going to target CB2 a lot?
Yes.
With Trey White? But also, we do know they don't really game plan, so there is probably, hey, don't go out there throwing your body around trying to make a play. Just sit back five, seven yards back and just make an open field tackle.
But also, the answer is, of course they're going to target corner two. Who's on the other side of the field?
Right, right.
Like, of course that's going to happen, because I saw a... surprising amount of worry about Trey White after that first preseason game. And I'm sitting here going, the only play I really didn't like from him was when he got dragged to a first down.
Right.
That was the only really what I'd call quote-unquote bad rep.
Mm-hmm.
There's even a punch out. Goes out of bounds.
Who jumped on that fumble? It wasn't Andreessen, right? Or no, nobody even did.
Yeah, it got out of bounds.
Yeah, it went right out of bounds. Nobody jumped on it.
But that's still... I'm going to expect corner two, no matter who it is, if it's White or Hairston, to have a lot more attention and show a little bit more signs of struggle. Why? Because they're seeing the football a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not going to be an indictment on cornerback two, whoever it may be. It's going to be teams recognize, yeah, we don't like throwing to that guy
over there. But the hope is he holds it down enough to where you kind of have to go to the other side. Or Hairston comes out. You know, even after this injury, and is able to take that spot back, and that's ultimately the hope constantly is that they eventually get to a point where you have to target Benford, because even targeting Hairston or White is a bad idea. We'll see with the safety room as well. Cole Bishop, who's back out there, it seemed in full yesterday, and we'll get more on practice yesterday and what is to come this week for the Bills as they get ready to travel to Chicago for a joint practice tomorrow. Sal Capaccio joining the show when we come back. You're listening to the Extra Point Show on WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer hanging here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. It is brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. 803-0550, the number to call if you want to jump on the show today. But for the next few minutes, we will go to the Wester Hotline. No Bills practice today as the team gets ready to travel to Chicago for a joint practice tomorrow. But still a lot going on yesterday. Sal Capaccio joins the show. Sal, good morning. How are we doing?
Pretty good, guys. Yeah, it's going to be a filled weekend with, you know, joint practice, obviously, and a game on Sunday night. So today the team will hold a bit of a walkthrough and no media, and then travel to Chicago. And then tomorrow it will be, I think, late morning, like kind of right when you're on here. Okay. So we'll see what we can do to kind of bring you some information about the practice, still organizing that time. They're also an hour different, so I have to watch all that together. And then Sunday night is the game, I think national television as well, by the way.
I believe that is right. We do also know for that game, the Bears are going to be playing their starters. Head coach Sean McDermott joined Chauvin the Bulldog yesterday. No confirmation on if we'll have any starters playing for the Bills. But right. Sal, on the Bears, I don't know about you, but for me at least, I watched too much of that game against the Dolphins, the Bears game, to get to Quinn Ewers. Don't worry, it's my problem, not yours. But I was a little surprised to see Caleb Williams not play, especially just from the outside looking in, seeing him kind of somewhat struggle at practice. I was a little surprised to not see him out there.
Yeah, I didn't really watch any of that game, but I do know I'm reading the reports of what was going on at those joint practices, right? And last week they had the joint practice against the Miami Dolphins, and more than anything, I kept hearing how the Bears' right. defense was dominating the Dolphins' offense. But on Caleb Williams specifically, I do think it's interesting that here's Ben Johnson. He gets this job. He's the most coveted head coach on the market. He's a very good offensive mind. He's going to really kind of revamp what they're doing offensively. He has a second-year quarterback in Caleb Williams who, let's face it, struggled a bit last year, ups and downs, probably more so than people expected. And they are going with two straight weeks of joint practices. And that's fine. And that's what works for them. Like, I'm not here to judge, but it is interesting to me because I would normally think that a coach like that would want to keep rolling with installing their own stuff, getting them together and on the same page before going against other teams. But maybe that's how he feels he has to ready his team better, which is go against other live competition as quickly as possible. So from a Bears standpoint, I think that's really interesting.
I also saw, too, Ben Johnson speaking with the media, I think this was yesterday, mentioning that they are throwing a ton at Williams in the offense,
yep.
and that they're going to start pulling it back as they get closer to the regular season. I don't know if that's necessarily normal in the NFL. I kind of like it, though.
We'll see how it works out, right? I mean, there's all these different ways to do it. You know, do you install in pieces at a time and you grow it and you add more on as you go? Or in this case, you throw as much as you can, you see what sticks, what you like. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I know, look, here in Buffalo, Joe Brady takes over as the offensive coordinator. And I ask him, how do you go about running your offense with what Josh has already been running, going back to Ken Dorsey or Brian Daboll and everybody kind of knowing, you know, what works. And he said, well, that's it. You start with what does Josh like, what works, and then you go from there. So there's always different ways to do it, and we'll see. We'll see how it works out for the Bears this season. But I like the fact that the Bills defensively have a full day of practice against a Ben Johnson offense. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's going to be cool for them to get those reps on their defensive side.
Sal Capaccio joining us on the Western Hotline. Sal, injuries are still a lengthy list. Not as lengthy as like a couple weeks ago, but it's still threatening the double digits, if not in there. Deion Dawkins, most notably, was not at practice yesterday after Tuesday. And then, of course, the wide receiver room still also heavily banged up. Tyler Bass still not practicing. Max Hairston remains out. There's still a lot of question marks with the injuries, Sal.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I lost you guys for a minute. I don't know what you heard or did. Get the last of my response about the Ben Johnson offense and the Bills defense?
No, we heard all that.
We heard all of that.
Okay, great. Sorry, that right at that moment I lost you guys, and that's why I asked if you were there. My apologies. All mm-hmm. right, so injuries. Sorry, I think that's what you asked me about yep. here, Derek. And yeah, there are definitely a bunch of injuries the Bills are still dealing with, including yesterday, down several wide receivers, right? I mean, like, this is just getting to a point where they're dipping so far into the depth chart at wide receiver. Now, that's great for those guys to get the opportunity when it comes time for that. But honestly, like, now, you know, you're missing not only Curtis Samuel, who's obviously been out for a little while here, hopefully getting back. Khalil Shakir, we know he's not coming back this week. But even yesterday, Elijah Moore and Tyrell Shavers, both out yesterday. So at wide receiver, you're dipping into the depth chart pretty good there. And then Joshua Palmer was definitely not completely right yesterday. He had a wrap on with a sleeve, and he was still doing everything, though. I didn't see him take a rep off, which was really great for him to show, you know, just he's out there. But he also had a really good practice, by the way. He was making catches, and, you know, that's something that I think him and Josh Allen need to get on the same page, and I thought that was really working yesterday. Tyler Bass still out. I don't know what, you know, obviously they have Caden Davis as a kicker right now. They've kept him on the roster here, and they do have Ray Davis. I don't expect him to kick. Sean McDermott said one time was enough to kind of see them, make sure they could do it. But at what point, like, do you start to get really concerned about Tyler Bass not being able to kick guys? I mean,
yeah, it's
been
a while.
This is now, I mean, it's been since the first week of training camp. Right, you have to think, like, so training camp started on the 30th. I'd say, like, right around August 1st, let's say, one of those days, somewhere in there. I mean, we're talking 3 weeks now we're going on, 2.5 weeks, and still no Tyler Bass. So that's concerning. And then offensive line, I mean, I said to the guys this morning, I'll say it again, Ryan Vandermark is suddenly becoming a really important part of this Bills team because Deion Dawkins did not practice yesterday. He's your starting left tackle. He has a back flare-up, according to Sean McDermott, who told Chilton the Bulldog yesterday. Hopefully you get him back soon. Doesn't sound serious, but still, he missed. Spencer Brown is returning from that back injury, but he should be okay, right? It feels like that's the case, but you know, it's something that they managed a little bit earlier. Tylon Grable is in concussion protocol, so Ryan Vandermark now suddenly is a starter. So you never know. Alec Anderson is still out. That's an interior guy that they don't have right now. Suddenly Chase Lunt becomes interesting as a guy that can be a little bit flexible, maybe the rookie. Tackle, guard, what they want to do with him there. So yeah, there's a lot of moving pieces here. The good news is they did get both safeties back yesterday, Cole Bishop and Taylor Rapp. So that's really good news.
Yeah, and on the safety room, Sal, it felt like the last time we heard from McDermott with the media, not yesterday with Chilton the Bulldog, but with the media, there almost seemed to be, I don't want to say an aggressive tone, but there was some worry, it felt like, from McDermott talking about the safety room. Bishop missing as much time as he has. When he has been on the field, Sal, it does seem like it's been Bishop's job and no one else. There's not really a fight there. But what have you seen from him?
Yeah, I don't see the details of if he's lining up exactly properly every time, right, and all his keys. Like, that's for the coaches to know. But what I see is a really good athlete, and when he's on the field, I see him covering ground, and I see a physical guy. And when I go back and watch last year's film, like, they used him all over. They used him in the box. They used him in center field. And I think that's kind of why they drafted him, A, and why they really needed him to be on the field, because let's face it, guys. As much as, you know, DeMar Hamlin was a nice baseline guy to plug in there at times and had a couple interceptions, they need more. They need more athleticism. They need more higher-end talent. They need more, I think, you know, critical plays being made by the safety position. And that's where I think Cole Bishop can help, but that can't happen if he's not available. So from what I've seen from him, he's as advertised as far as the athlete. It's the catching up on, is he in the right spot? Does he know everything to do in every nuanced situation working next to Taylor Rapp? And that's what Sean McDermott's talking about. When he talks about Cole Bishop, when he talks about Taylor Rapp, some of these other guys, the biggest thing for Sean McDermott for the safety position is, especially that position, but it goes for linebacker, it goes for offensive line, defensive line, is you got to be able to work in tandem with the guy next to you. And if you're not getting time on task, then it doesn't matter even if, like, you're a really good player, because if one of you guys makes a mistake on the other guy, that can compound it with two mistakes being made, basically, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned kind of the versatility, too, how they used Bishop last year. One player that's getting praised for that, also the last time McDermott spoke with the media, Jordan Hancock, who I thought had a pretty solid game against the Giants, and he's being used everywhere, which is sort of what he was, you know, pegged to be out of Ohio State.
Yeah, I agree. I like the game he had. He obviously had the interception that did not count because Landon Jackson was offsides. He also had a really nice play on he came up and laid a lick on somebody in front of me, and I don't remember the exact play, but I remember saying, okay, that was a nice hit by Jordan Hancock. Nice tackle. When I talked to him after the game, I asked him about everything that's on his plate, and he was very interesting how he talked about making the transition. It sounded to me, okay, it just sounded to me like Jordan feels like he's here at safety for a little while, you know, and that makes sense considering the injuries they've had. So now, what happens this week? Taylor Rapp and Cole Bishop are back. Do they start to move Jordan Hancock a little bit more back to the nickel? By the way, Cam Lewis wasn't at practice yesterday. Mm-hmm. So, like, something there where now you need a little bit more from Jordan Hancock there. So the thing about Bobby Babich reminds us, he is a rookie. He is a rookie. It's the details. Those are the things that matter. I like Jordan Hancock's future on the Buffalo Bills. I don't exactly know what position that future is. Maybe he's just a Cam Lewis and he does everything and that's just fine. I think they're really, really confident and comfortable, though, with Cam Lewis on this roster and being that guy right now until Jordan Hancock can learn all those nuances.
Sal, speaking on players that had a good showing back on Saturday last week, who are some players that you're looking for that can try to build on a solid performance from last weekend and an opportunity to try to further cement their case with their standing on the roster?
Well, I think we'll go back to wide receiver here. Tyrell Shavers, obviously a guy that we've talked a lot about, and he had a really nice game.
Yep.
We didn't hear much from Elijah Moore. We kind of haven't. And I'll be honest, though, guys, it's not necessarily because he's done anything wrong. If you watch that, there's a viral clip of Elijah Moore running free down the middle of the field, and Mitch Trubisky didn't see him. What if he throws it to him and he catches it for a touchdown, right? I mean, we're like, oh, there's Elijah Moore. That's why you brought him in. But how about the injury to Curtis Samuel? Like, where does that stand right now? This opens the door for a guy like Tyrell Shavers. I'll give you another guy. It's Laviska Shenault. I want to see what the plan is here for Laviska Shenault going forward. He returned a punt in that game. He's never returned a punt in a regular season NFL game or a college game. But the fact that they gave him one in that game tells me they're trying to see what more he can handle, because if there's like if he can do that and be effective, maybe there's a spot for him to also fit in on the roster at wide receiver. They threw him a ball in the two-point conversion. He made a nice catch, had another catch beside that. He also, as we know, is a main kick returner that they really like having back there. I think that's a guy that could, you know, start to show up a little bit, see what he can do. I like what Jackson Hawes did at tight end. Now, he's not surpassing Dalton Kincaid or Dawson Knox, but I just think this is a situation where this is a guy you're going to rely on a lot. He's going to be on the field in these blocking situations, especially. I don't know if you guys know. Did you know about me giving the announcers jinx, unfortunately?
No.
On Sunday?
What happened?
Oh, yeah. So this, I should have gave myself an arrow down on arrow up, arrow down. I forgot when I wrote it. I made a note, give myself an arrow down, which I've done before. But here's what happened. So we go to break during a timeout, and the radio broadcast is during the commercial. And during the commercial, I said, hey, you know, we're walking through, like, who's bringing it back? What are we talking about? I go, oh, I got something on Jackson Hawes. I'll bring it back. Greg Harvey, our excellent, you know, director, producer. He's like, yep, absolutely. They count me down, come back. Radio broadcast comes back. And I say, live on the air, you know, Jackson Hawes, rookie tight end, known as the best blocking tight end in the draft, but he has really good hands as well. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Buffalo Bills throw him a pass or two before this thing is over.
Mm-hmm.
What happened on the very next play?
Yeah. Oh, That was then. Oh no!
Preseason very next play.
Don't beat yourself up. It's preseason.
I mean, yeah. So anyway, I do want to go back. I just think about that. It's funny because it reminds me of the fact that he is a rookie, and there's a lot going on for him. And maybe he just wanted to turn up field a little bit too soon. But I will tell you guys, in all honesty, he does have better hands than people gave him credit for. And he did drop that pass, but he makes catches sometimes in practice, and you're like, okay, there he is. I want to see a little bit more from him. What he can do a little bit there. So I think that's a guy that I'll be looking at. On the defensive end, it's all about those young defensive linemen. I need to see more from Landon Jackson. I didn't love his game on Saturday, and that doesn't mean he can't be a lot better this week. And, you know, again, you guys are swimming upstream right now as rookies. I want to see more from Landon Jackson. The penalty obviously is notable, but he wasn't on the stat sheet at all. It really didn't make an impact. Maybe that changes this week. He gets another week under his belt. We'll see where that goes. On the other hand, I really did like what I saw from both Deion Walker and TJ Sanders, and I'd love for them to build off it.
And then, Sal, last thing for me here. We did get a little bit more on the details of James Cook's contract late yesterday, reading off of Mike Gennetti's Spot Track. And really, it kind of breaks down to 3 years, $30.1 million practical. It sounds like he's also going to get $25 million of his guaranteed money over the next year. I think all in all, the Bills did a really good job with this deal, and Cook himself also did a really good job getting a lot of this money up front.
Yeah, I agree. As much as we, you know, say, man, James Cook is handling this very weirdly. He shows up and then he's not at practice and he doesn't practice. And then, you know, all the things that were said on social media and all that. And, you know, I've said since the beginning, agent driven, like he's listening to his agent and he's giving them this advice and it just seems a bit odd. I've said all that. You know what, though? At the end of the day, I think his agent and him did really well for themselves. They got a nice paycheck here to put him more in line with some of the top backs in the league. And that's always been the aim. It wasn't the $15 million per year that was floated out there, but it's a nice paycheck. In the meantime, he can float out all these different numbers and put it as high as you want, because that's what agents do when they give the numbers to reporters. But I think the Bills did a good job of, you know, keeping the money down a little bit to allow them over the next 2 years, specifically this year and next year, to still have room around the cap. And then let's see where it goes from there. Let's remember, James is under contract for this year, and it's a four-year extension. It's basically a five-year deal. So you bake that into what he's getting up front to give him some money, and then you extend that out a little bit. Now you can have a little bit more room, and his salary cap got lowered this year by about $2 million. And then next year, his salary cap is basically what it would have been this year. So I think from that standpoint, Brandon Bean did a really good job to make sure that he's not offsetting his own plan building this team.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Sal, trip to Chicago, any big plans? I mean, you guys are getting there a little bit earlier than you normally would for a game.
Yes, we have plans. On Saturday,
here we go.
I will be attending the Cubs-Pirates game at Wrigley Field.
There we go.
Booyah.
Have you ever been to Wrigley Field before?
Yes, one time, 2018, I believe, was 2018? Josh's rookie year, I think it was. The Bills played the Bears in a preseason game. You guys remember that big comeback the Bills had, like, late? It was A.J. McCarron.
McCarron sighting in a Bills uniform.
Yeah, if I remember right, because they played at Chicago a few times in preseason, but I think that was the year a bunch of us in the media went to Wrigley Field the day before and sat in the bleachers. It was really hot. It's going to be hot on Saturday, too. But, yeah, Chicago's a really fun city. It's a great summer city. And the Pirates and Cubs, Pirates happen to be in town playing the Cubs, although I don't believe Paul Skeens is pitching. That would have been really cool. But, yeah, going to hit that up on Saturday.
Fantastic. Enjoy the trip. Fly safe. We'll talk soon.
All right, guys. Thanks.
That was Sal Macchio there on the West Her Hotline. I have heard that about Chicago almost 100% unanimously. It is a beautiful summer city. Never been. I almost went a few years ago back when I was in college. Didn't end up going. It was going to be in the summer. That is a city I do want to hit up. And also, Derek, I will tell you, now that I've been to more Major League Baseball games, I didn't go a ton when I was younger. Being an Angels fan, the team I followed, you know, they're on the West Coast. I want to start hitting up more ballparks. I really do.
I want to say I feel like the thing that I'd want to watch the most is probably the Bulls, if they get good.
Yeah, you're asking almost for a miracle at that point.
Yeah,
with that.
But also, that's a value ticket right now if I go.
Mm-hmm.
So
go see the arena and all the banners and stuff like that.
Yeah, why not, right?
It's so funny with the Bulls. They were bad before Jordan got there, really good when Jordan got there, and then really bad after he left with a few years with Derrick Rose in there where they were good.
Yeah, they sprinkled in a little bit of that, but I think it would be cool to go to that stadium and just – it's a cheaper ticket right now than anything else
cheaper
in Chicago, probably.
Than anything else,
other
absolutely.
Than White Sox games. Don't ever go to White Sox games.
803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive X Point Show, and this is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Wrapping up hour number one here on a beautiful Thursday. Do have a little bit of NFL news revolving around the Chiefs. Wide receiver Rashee Rice is expected to have his disciplinary hearing with the NFL on Tuesday, September 30th. And this is coming from Adam Schefter. This would mean that Rice is now likely to be available to play the first 4 weeks of the season. However, he is absolutely expected to be suspended following a multi-car crash in Dallas. That was back in the 2024 offseason. We already know Jordan Addison has picked up his suspension. He's going to miss, I think, the first 3 weeks. I imagine Rice is between 4 and 6 games. With how publicized this was and everything, I think he's going to miss 4 to 6. 4 being the most likely. With that being said, if he's available for the first month and maybe even a little bit more and then gets suspended, let's put in the middle 5 games. I don't think the Chiefs like that at all. I think the Chiefs absolutely would rather he misses the first 4 games of the season, we'll have him back, and there's no worry. We just go the rest of the way. But for him to potentially miss the middle portion of the season, not great. That would also coincide with the Bills game, most likely, depending on what the suspension is. And for them, I think being in a tougher division now with Denver, we'll see what the Chargers look like this year. I know I was a little bit higher on them than you are with the Rashawn Slater news. I have dipped a little bit, but I've always been very high on Denver this offseason. I do wonder how much the Chiefs actually do want to have him not be suspended early. He is going to get suspended.
But I think
to get it out of the way early, it's ripping the Band-Aid off.
If it looks like it's the middle of the season, say it's after week 4 and anywhere between 4 to 6, right? That means that he might miss the Bills game?
Yeah, Bills play them week 9.
The middle of the season looks like this. Jacksonville, Detroit, Las Vegas, Washington, Buffalo. It avoids Denver. It avoids L.A. There are three teams in there that are legitimate threats to beat you, even with Rashee Rice in the lineup.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
One player doesn't make a roster when they're not a quarterback, but especially since the Chiefs proved that they could win without Rice all of last year after he got hurt.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's not helpful by any means, is what I would say to that, though.
But they can probably survive it.
If they can survive that, which they probably can because they showed that they have been able to, which is why the wide receiver thing never really gave me a headache in the first place, because the Chiefs are doing just fine without that.
I'll never forget Matt Verderam coming out with Sheldon Bulldog and being like, can the Bills win a Super Bowl with this wide receiver core? And he goes, the Chiefs won two with theirs, and it was maybe worse.
Right.
I don't think that was exactly what he said, but it was essentially the Chiefs won two with theirs, and it wasn't that great.
Yeah. So that's where I go ahead and look at this. The NFL would have an interesting thing to talk about, though, in that middle five.
Mm-hmm.
Three of those games are on network television, like national games.
Yeah, you know the Bills-Chiefs game is 425.
But then the Bills-Chiefs game as well. I'm mm-hmm. talking about there's four of them here that the country is seeing.
Jacksonville's Monday night, Sunday night's Detroit.
Monday night,
who cares
Washington.
About Vegas, Monday night, Washington, and then the 425 Bills game, which is the game of the week, and they build it up like crazy. Yeah.
And say it is six games. He misses through the bye week, and it's Denver. So the decision of how many games he's suspended for is really going to factor into this.
Because if it's you miss the Bills game, but then you have the bye week, and then Denver, it's a nice, easy, we'll get you back into it. We'll get you reintegrated.
Which I do think the NFLPA will fight for that.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call. With tomorrow being the joint practice, we'll jump into some of the guys we want to keep an eye on for preseason game number two on Sunday. Also, because they are playing the Bears, do want to jump in a little bit on the second-year quarterback conversation, because it feels like Caleb Williams for the Bears is maybe the only guy that has bad energy, negative aura, whatever you want to call it, bad vibes around him compared to everyone else that was drafted with him. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Derek and Zach. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
We're in a situation where we want to go and have a good practice, good strong practice, and then, you know, with some of the injuries that we do have, want to get through that practice and see where we stand as it relates to those injuries and then numbers available each position. So it has not been decided yet, but I think the first step here for us is having a strong practice outing against the Bears on Friday and then being able kind of to reset the deck and go from there as it relates to how we come out of that and how healthy we are.
Buffalo Bills head coach Sean McDermott from yesterday with Shope and the Bulldog. We don't know yet if starters will be playing this weekend. A good bit of them played last weekend. Josh Allen not among them. We do know the Bears are going to be playing their starters, including Caleb Williams. We talked about this, Derek, before the first preseason game against the Giants. You know, do you want starters to play, what have you?
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
I still don't, especially with all the injuries. I don't. But there are guys I do want to see. Like, I'm with Sal. Like, I want to see the defensive line. I want to see the rookies continue to impress. I want to see Landon Jackson start to impress, because I think there's a very real chance that they see him as a AJ Epenesa replacement, sooner rather than later, maybe. But he needs to start showing out. Also, the Tyrell Shaver stuff. I want to see it keep going. I'm not expecting to have another 58-yard catch, don't get me wrong. But I'd love if he reeled in another 3-4 catches, maybe even in the first half, and you're like, okay, like they're going to keep six wide receivers. I want to have that feeling by the end of this of that position group has made it so difficult for them to cut anybody. They're going to keep six.
Correct. I do think that conversation's already there.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to keep six. I always thought that they would end up keeping six anyway. And if not, then six is like first practice squad call up all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Until you can then open a spot for him. You even have an extra roster spot, or two of them, really, to start the year.
Yeah.
Because of Hoyt and Ogunjobi. That definitely allows for six to be a comfortable allotment for the wide receiver position.
I also will say, too, on the defensive line, It doesn't mean too much. I'd like them to register a sack, though. That was one of Sal's arrow downs. But I'd like them to register a sack.
Against the quarterback who took 68 sacks last year? I agree.
Yeah, he was third in the league last year. Caleb Williams, we're talking about. Third in the league last year in terms of sack percentage. The only guys that were better than him.
Higher, not better.
Yep. Deshaun Watson at 13.25. Again, he only played seven games. And then Will Levis at 11.9. He only played 12 games to Williams' 17.
So the players that had a higher sack percentage than him were the worst contract in the NFL's history and the meme lord himself.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yep. Not a good club to be with.
And as Derek, you mentioned, he led the league in sacks by quite a margin. Number two in the league was C.J. Stroud, who we all acknowledged had a horrific offensive line, 52. Williams took 68. Now, on that, Chicago.
16 more than the team that had the leaky offensive line.
Yeah. Now, we all do know this offseason has been Chicago retooling mainly the interior of the offensive line. They may have, I think, three new starters on that line. But yeah, I'd like to see a Bills defensive line that I liked in spots, individual performances. I liked what I saw against the Giants. What I did not like seeing was, to be fair, how much the Giants were able to pass the ball, to be perfectly honest. But we've mentioned that's probably more due to game plan. Don't throw your body out there too much. Like, we're trying to stay healthy. We want to see you react.
If we see the second thing, if we see this the second week in a row, then yeah, you're kind of like a little more annoyed.
But yeah, I mean, against a team that gave up a lot of sacks, I'd like to see guys like T.J. Sanders, Deion Walker, Landon Jackson be able to notch that. I think especially, too, with all of us not being at practice, this is what we get to see. This is where, for preseason games, I think are important to a lot of fans, is we don't get to see practice. The most many of us will get to do on a regular basis is read what guys like Sal wrote.
Right.
And we get his thoughts. And we'll see some videos. But a preseason game, we actually get to see, T.J. Sanders make a great swim move on the right guard. Deion Walker being a bigger human being than basically everyone on the field and making big plays. You want to see that in part as well, because like outside of the draft, this is maybe the most hopeful period for most NFL fan bases.
Right.
And for somebody like me especially, wanting to see the defensive line really take a step forward because you put so much into it.
You invested so much into this that you need.
I mean, I mentioned it during the game. How happy I was that I was finally starting to see game reps of defensive linemen. In a way, I kind of needed it to feel better because up to this point, you're throwing darts at a dartboard. And they can hit, don't get me wrong, but you literally don't know. You're doing it blindly and hoping it hits.
The and preseason in practice, allows you're not you to, able to register quarterback hits or sacks.
Yeah, and in the preseason, you're peeking the blindfold up a little bit. You're able to see just a little bit. It may be a mirage because you're half blinded, but you don't know. This will give you a little bit more hope if it goes well. I think that's also to the negative point why seeing the third down defense struggle, it was already a struggle last year. It was already an issue to see them continue to be so.
Right.
It's why we all take the preseason pledge, right?
But
it still happened. And you're like, not again, not again, not again.
But dang it, it would be nice to get some sacks registered on a quarterback who looked like he was way too patient with the football last year.
Yeah, Williams is interesting. I'm very excited to see him play. I liked him a lot in college. I didn't love him. He did a lot of things that I
did not think he was a first overall pick type quarterback.
The game against Notre Dame, I think, did that for a lot of people because he looked lost. He looked like once there was any kind of pressure on him, and that's true of any quarterback, but any pressure on him, he looked
even
rattled.
His highlights, he'd go wandering 20 yards into the backfield, and I'm like, that's Zach Wilson.
Little Johnny Manziel-esque too, where if it worked, you're like, oh my gosh, this is the greatest play I've ever seen. But you're like, yeah, but in the NFL, that's not going to work.
They're going to close on him faster if he's running around wandering in the backfield like that. That is, you have more athleticism than the rest of college kids. In the NFL, they're all about as fast, if not faster than you.
Yep. And so I'm excited to see him play just because I want to see, yeah, in Sal's point, tomorrow, how do the Bills look against a Ben Johnson-led offense? I'm just excited to see what Caleb Williams looks like with, I guess the skeleton of one in a preseason game, just to see like how he's matured. Because it does feel like he's the only rookie quarterback, or second-year quarterback, excuse me, that has like no positive vibes around him. And that includes guys like J.J. McCarthy and Michael Penix, who either barely played or didn't play at all last year. You know, McCarthy is living off of, for many Vikings fans, one preseason game in which he looked really good, and then he hurt his knee and he was done. Penix played, I think, three games, three touchdowns, three picks, and that's about it. Where Williams played most of the year, May played most of the year, Nix, Daniels, like they all did. But the other three, it feels like we've got our guy. We're moving on. I speak about Denver all the time, about how I think they're a rising tide here. Maybe they challenge the Chiefs for the division. I think overall they're just going to be a perennial playoff team in the AFC. Drake May with New England. They got him Vrabel now. What's Kyle Williams look like? What's Stephon Diggs look like? We kind of know they have the quarterback after 1 year in which they won three games, whatever it was. Yep. Jaden Daniels goes to the NFC Championship. Got to feel great about that.
Amazingly.
And then you have Williams. And it just feels like, at least nationally, no one believes in him.
And that's where McCarthy getting hurt, it's like it's still that benefit of the doubt. We don't know what he is really
right,
yet.
Right.
And Williams, it was bad. It was not good. Was bad. The only thing that was not bad about him was that he only threw six interceptions.
Yeah, his touchdown interception ratio is fantastic.
But that's because he was picking the dirt out of his face mask half the time.
We mentioned 68 sacks. He also led the league in throwaway passes at 36. The next closest was Darnold at 29 and Mahomes at 26.
And that is also, you're going to get sacked.
So you got to throw it away.
And now we're not even looking at the amount of times he got hit.
Mm-hmm. In terms of his QB rating, he is the lowest of anybody that played more than 15 games.
The boy got battered almost as bad as David Carr.
46.7, and this is with a team that added, you know, Roma Dunze, who was a big name for most Bills fans.
DJ Moore's part of that trade.
DJ Moore is already there. Cole Kmet's there. Like, they had weapons that you felt are going to be good enough. I think that also points to how bad the Bears were set up last year. And while I complain about firing a coach after year one with a rookie quarterback and going into a new system and changing it, the Bears were one of them, and why I say that is more, you should fire the staff first. Hire the new staff, then go draft the quarterback.
Then draft the quarterback that staff believes in, especially if you have the first overall pick.
Rather than bringing in Ben Johnson to, hey, you have to make Caleb work. We took him first overall.
A first overall pick, mind you, that they never really needed in the first place.
They never had. They didn't earn it.
They got it in a trade. They got it through Carolina.
Yeah, which was why many of us at this point last year were talking about, man, is this the best rookie situation ever for a quarterback? DJ Moore, Roma Dunze, they've got it. It feels like a good defense. They're going to be just fine.
Turns out Shane Waldron was just in the back corner like, no.
We maybe should have known that earlier. Never forget, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, I think this was at Super Bowl week, when asked about Shane Waldron, he basically couldn't say a positive thing. Like, he struggled for 30 seconds to say anything positive.
Yep.
And NFL
players are typically diplomatic in those situations.
And I think we talked to Zach Pearson a few months ago, and even he mentioned, like, they kind of knew early this was bad. I think in camp, and you look at the schedule as well, last year they put up 36 against Carolina, 35 against Jacksonville. They hit the bye.
They're 4-2 at the bye.
They're 4-2. Everything looks pretty good. Caleb's starting to, it feels like, maybe get better.
He's got a couple of 300-yard games in there now. Yeah.
And again, you're 4-2 going into the bye. You're feeling good. They will score over 20 points just two more times. An overtime loss in week 12 to Minnesota, and the final game of the year against Green Bay. They score 24 and 27 respectively in those.
And that's in 11 games, people.
Yep. They lose to Washington. That's the big Hail Mary play by Jaden Daniels. They score 15 there, 9 against Arizona, 3 against the Patriots, 19 against the Packers. I mentioned the Minnesota
game. Pause real quick. That's 3 against those Patriots.
Yeah. 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 That's the Gerard Mayo Patriots against Detroit. The game ultimately gets Matt Eberflus fired on Thanksgiving. 20, San Francisco 13, Minnesota 12, Detroit 17, Seattle 3. They are a horrific offensive football team in the second half of the year. It is wild to me that I look, and we kind of know based off history, not all of these quarterbacks will succeed. Like, even the guys that have kind of hit already, you can almost expect a second-year drop-off.
More so, the classes that get that five or six players selected, there's at least one of them that gets people fired.
Yeah.
The 2021 class, that was four of them. Four of them decided, no, we're actually all bad, and Trevor's the maybe of the group.
He is the maybe of the group.
And that's the number one overall pick. He's the maybe of the group.
But they're also on their third coach trying to figure that out.
And 2018, Josh Rosen's the guy that gets people fired. Darnold also does. And it does look like he's kind of fixing his career a little bit, but he had to do it away from the team that drafted him. Mm-hmm. Mayfield is shunned by the team that drafted him. And while he's fixed his career, the team is yet to recover. So there are times when you get these large draft classes, you're going to see somebody, at minimum, oftentimes it's two out of a four or five quarterback draft class,
mm-hmm.
where a team has to take years to recover from it.
And this may be the one that, with Chicago, I like Ben Johnson a lot. I mentioned it too. I kind of like what they're doing with Williams now, where they're giving the offense a ton and they're making him remember a lot, and it's difficult, what have you. But they're going to start peeling it back the closer they get to week one. And then as the year goes on, we're going to start implementing it again. And I think that's a good way. It's not exactly one for one with this, but it's a lot like a batter in the box has two or three bats. And they're swinging to kind of, you know, it's the more weighted swing so that when you go up to the plate, you have the one, right? It's that kind of feeling, but it's more mental. But with Washington, we've already seen Daniels hit. He has. He's made an NFC championship.
Right.
He looked great. And he was basically thrown to Terry McLaurin and who else? De'Ami Brown only pops off in the playoffs. Now we'll see what they've done for him in year two with the McLaurin stuff still going on. Brown is gone. They brought in Samuel, what have you. Drake May. Mentioned it. I mean, they won like four games last year, three games, whatever it was.
Four.
They've added some pieces. Kyle Williams in the third round out of Washington State. Stephon Diggs goes in there. But absolutely, he could take a step back. But right now, none of us feel that way. So two of the first three we feel pretty good about. McCarthy, well, depending on who you ask nationally, he either sucks or he's here we go. That is more coming from Vikings fans of here we go. He's taken over a great offense. I think he's in a great situation there. But if you listen to Colin Coward or I know Diane Orsini, they're a little less ready to openly embrace McCarthy. And then you also have Bo Nix, made the playoffs last year. Was arguably statistically equal to Daniels in most parts.
More importantly, kind of does the opposite of Caleb Williams. He turns it on after starting incredibly slow.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like a guy can't even hit an accurate football. That Broncos-Jets game, if you love the forward pass, that game set you back 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Between how poorly Nix was playing and how poorly Rodgers was playing, also how great those defenses were doing at the time. But Nix turns it on. Penix, we'll see, but like it's a better feeling than...
Penix is a better feeling, too, because you look around the offense that he has.
He has a lot of supporting cast.
He's got players around him.
But supporting cast does not a quarterback make. Mm-hmm. Look at Caleb Williams.
Right.
I do wonder what's going to happen here. And you're right. Williams is easily the one that you're most pessimistic about the six of them in a draft class. If you have five players out of a six quarterback draft class that relatively hit to varying degrees.
Oh, she have a documentary.
And the number one overall pick is the one that misses?
I think especially, too, with the context that Chicago felt like they were coming in a really good situation, that it wasn't the standard, oh, you're going to a horrific organization, you need to turn it around. And to a certain extent, that is true. Chicago and offense don't really mix.
Right.
But the feeling around that team, it felt almost unanimously was it's a really good situation. We just don't know about the coach. We found out about the coach, but in ways we also found out about Williams. I just, like that's the thing. Like we mentioned the 2018 class there. Allen, Jackson, they're both MVP winners. Like that alone is a smash of a class.
The Bills and Ravens are fixtures.
Right. Darnold is a 4,000-yard passer. He's on, what would this be now? His fourth team with Seattle.
Correct.
But they seem to have paid him a pretty penny to be their starter at least for the next 3 years. You also have Baker Mayfield, who really figured out his career in Tampa Bay. That's four guys there that are, at worst, very successful.
And
Baker won a playoff game. Darnold made the playoffs last year.
Darnold's kind of your middleman at this point right mm-hmm. now. He still hasn't made a career out of it yet. He has a good season, which is better than what he had. But Mayfield is the line, like the threshold of above average. If Like, if you're in that draft class and you're worse than Mayfield, we've kind of got a problem.
Yeah.
Darnold is that right now. If Darnold puts it together here in Seattle as well, different story. And then it's, okay, it's just the Jets being the Jets. Good to know.
It's the Browns being the Browns.
It's the Browns being the Browns and getting rid of a player who was playing well for them. And then there's Josh Rosen.
But that's kind of standard for these quarterback classes. There is the one in the first round. It's a disaster. Zach Wilson is that from a few years ago.
First of all, a few years ago, everyone is a disaster. Even Trevor Lawrence is becoming that.
But it's just, if five of them hit and the one is Chicago, I brought this up on the nightcap last night. Think about how many darts at the dartboard they've thrown in the last 15 years, 10 years. One of them's on the Bills right now. Trubisky is a top five pick.
How do you not?
They make the playoffs with him.
As an organization in its entire history, have never figured out the forward pass.
I mean, they just haven't. You go from Trubisky, they make the playoffs with him. You got the double doing thing in Philadelphia. They probably should have won that game.
Which breaks them.
But it falls apart. They then try again. Justin Fields. I'm a huge Fields guy, right? I think most people know that. I can barely quit him now. I see the one highlight and I'm like, I'm back. I'm back in, baby. But he absolutely does not work in Chicago. Absolutely does not. And there were even signs there early. There were signs with Trubisky as well, too. We forget. He threw six touchdown passes, I think, in his second year against Tampa Bay. I mean, there were signs there with Trubisky of like maybe he's taking the step forward. Fields, at least with a rushing attack, you're like, well, we've got this early. If he gets the passing game going, we'll be fine. He never does. And now we get to Williams. And he has one of the worst seasons. Again, if you don't look at touchdowns to interceptions, it's one of the worst rookie seasons you could have.
I'm going to ask you this, point blank.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who leads this team with the most prolific passing season that the Chicago Bears have had in all time in the franchise history?
Like, I feel it all time.
In their entire franchise history. Best season.
Just one season. I want to say it's a Cutler year. I don't think it's going to be. For the memes, it'll be Sid Luckman.
So, ready? Caleb Williams is fifth after the year that he had.
Incredible. Incredible.
Three of those years up ahead of him are indeed Cutler. You are correct.
Okay.
He is not the number one answer.
Is it Sid Luckman?
It's not Sid Luckman.
It's not McMahon, is it?
No. McMahon. Where is McMahon's best pass?
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, there's no way it's Jim McMahon.
McMahon's best year is 21st.
Okay.
It's
Bobby Douglas.
It's a person who shares a very similar name to me. Take away the first letter in my name. Eric Kramer.
Not a real person. Got it.
In 1995 with 3,838 yards.
Just missed out on 4,000.
They've still never had a 4,000-yard passer in their entire existence.
Well, that is one of my favorite stats, like in football. Like I want for Bears fans to not have that anymore. I also kind of don't want to lose that stat because it's really fun. Like it. Look. We all wanted the Cubs to win a World Series, but also part of you was like, this is insane. It's gone over for a century. Like this is insane. It's cool. Kramer, by the way, in that year, he's 31, 29 touchdowns, 10 picks in 95. That's a really darn good year. They're only 9-7, though.
He takes only 15 sacks on the whole year. That's less than one per game. Good for you, fellow Kramer.
I'm very surprised by a Chicago Bears quarterback throwing 522 passes. That doesn't feel right.
What are you talking about? Cutler has 561, 555 right underneath that.
And it also feels horribly wrong.
And Caleb Williams has thrown the most passes in Chicago Bears history.
From last year?
In a season. 562 attempts.
He did throw that many, didn't
he? Just beating out Cutler at 561.
He did throw that many. I'm very excited to see the second year group. And in part, I want to see if Williams can take that step forward. I was not as high on him as a prospect. I think many people know I was a huge Drake May guy. But I did like Williams. I thought he was in a great situation. Doesn't look like that right now. But we'll see now with Ben Johnson and what he can do. 803-0550, the number two call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here until 12 o'clock. This is WGR.
Any reaction to Grant Stewart essentially putting into question the practice habits of his team?
No, I don't. I mean, literally does not affect me whatsoever. I hope we get the absolute best practice from Grant and everybody else between the whistles. And that makes us better. So I think there's a lot of noise, and I've filed that into the noise category.
That is Dolphins head coach Mike McDaniel. Yesterday and today, they're having joint practices with the Detroit Lions, and one of the Lions linebackers, I think it's Grant Stewart, he mentioned basically like he doesn't really understand like what they're doing, the Dolphins. He just kind of is sort of lost in what they're doing.
Speaking of teams that just decide to like get themselves stuck in the mud on purpose,
the Dolphins. I don't like anything that's going on with them. I will tell you though, I was listening to this morning the bootleg podcast, Brett Coleman and EJ Snyder do that, and going through every team. I think today is the Bills day. I think either today or tomorrow their long Bills video is coming out. But or no, I think
possibility means you have a chance.
Passion opens the door to all possibilities.
When I feel like anything's possible, I feel kind of giddy.
I want to be an astronaut,
an artist,
an actress.
To visit another country.
All I need is a backpack and a pair of shoes and I'll find a way.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
I've never felt like more things are possible than right now.
In the right shoes, anything's possible.
DSW, countless shoes at brag-worthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
Today was the Dolphins one. It wasn't yesterday. So today I was listening to it. They're like, at least Brett is, very excited about the Dolphins, or at least intrigued by them.
They're intriguing.
I see, I don't think they are at all. I think McDaniel's out by week six.
Ready?
That's terrible.
That is where I have a different type of intriguing.
Oh, okay.
That's where the intrigue lies.
Like let's see when their bye week is, because that's where I think this could get really bad.
My intrigue is the
week 12. It's a late
me
bye.
Questioning why people watch reality television. Intrigue.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We're waiting to see the fire start, and I have pulled up with my bag of marshmallows and s'mores kit, and I'm ready to make some s'mores over the fire.
They start week one.
That's my intrigue with them.
Week one at Indy, then New England at home, at Buffalo, New York, the Jets.
So they get the AFC East and Indianapolis and start.
Well, the AFC East of old.
The old AFC East in totality.
There's a real shot I think they can start 0-4. I don't like almost anything about them. And even all the drama as well around Tyreek Hill and Tua Tagovailoa, like what's their relationship like? Tua's mentioning, you know, the frustrations of the offense. Or Tyreek Hill, I think, mentioned too, like after like 3 years there, Miami still doesn't totally understand the offense. Their vibes there are horrendous. And vibes don't mean everything. I get that. But you do want to have a locker room that is on message, that everyone kind of feels the same way, and you're all moving together. The Dolphins don't feel like that at all.
I wouldn't even say it's the vibes. It seems that there's a lack of focus, which is far worse to say about a team than anything. Miami is a very questionable set for what they might be, because they might be talented enough to just ho-hum win seven games.
Well, especially too, I mean, after the AFC East run there, they get at Carolina, the Chargers, at Cleveland, at Atlanta. Those are absolutely beatable teams.
They're beatable
absolutely.
Teams. The entire AFC East has a very favorable schedule this year. But what does it turn into? Like the NFC South games for teams like Miami and the Jets and the Patriots, those aren't automatic wins anymore though. Carolina's getting scrappier. Atlanta has rebuilt their pass rush. Tampa's Tampa. The Saints are terrible, but you know what? If you lose to the Saints, then you're really in trouble.
Yeah, and at home too.
Yeah, you better do that. With Spencer Rattler probably starting at this point, because Tyler Shuck is.
It does sound like it's going to be Rattler. At least
not
that's the
good.
Feelings. But yeah, they're playing in Spain this year, by the way. I completely forgot about that. Washington. That actually I'm excited for.
Yeah, you mentioned the Rashi Rice thing, and I looked at their schedule, and it's like, oh, right. They're playing on a Friday to open the season,
Brazil.
And it's on YouTube.
Is that right? It's on YouTube TV?
It's on YouTube.
Yeah, already too many for me. I'll get there.
Can we go just back to complaining about cable again? That'd be great.
I'm 5 to 6 years away from just being old enough to complain about the streaming services. I feel like I'm going to earn that right by 30. Where I'm like, I'm done. That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm already kind of there where I'm like, this is too much.
This is too much.
I grew up in the land of cable, and I saw the rise of streaming services. I'm already done. There's too many of them.
The rise was fine. The fact that everyone now needs their own to make their money.
I'm just exhausted by it.
Look,
I'm exhausted by it.
Whatever. I would say support local business, but none of you are.
Like, it's just... Like, I want to watch, like, some of these exciting television shows.
I don't know, man.
And, like, I see it's, oh, it's on Apple TV. No shot. Cool. Moving on.
Cool. Yeah. I'm not getting something, like, yeah.
I've had HBO for years, but how soon do I get rid of that? Like, I mean, I kept that for years due to, I'm a huge Game of Thrones guy, and I kept that for years to watch it. How soon before I'm like, I'm out, I'm done. I can't do this.
Band of Brothers is on there.
Band of Brothers is on there. I love
and
rewatching
the Pacific,
it.
And the Pacific.
I love rewatching Band of Brothers, that kind of stuff. But, like, is that going to force me to, like, keep it?
That's why I don't watch many TV shows.
Probably not. See,
I don't pay for a bunch
TV
of different
and movie junkie.
But I don't pay for a bunch of different streaming services in that sort of sense.
Painful.
Like, it is painful. All right.
Now so I get a football game on YouTube.
Yeah. Should we get things back on track?
I mean, sure.
I mean, sure, he says.
Now I'm upset, though, thinking about Apple TV and watching a football game on YouTube. Speaking about football games, though, the Bills do play one this Sunday night because, of course, we're going to have a preseason game at night. That makes logical sense to everybody.
Zach's in a hater mood, so I'm going to take the moment to get connected with our fans. And as always, that is brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Steve tweeting in from the last segment when we were talking about Caleb Williams. If Williams cannot throw for 4,000 yards with this coach and this stable of wide receivers, it may never get done in Chicago. Steve, I'm absolutely on your side on this one. If they can't hit this combo to get to 4K, you might as well just give them the wing T formation and run triple option like Navy.
I think what's even funnier about
give it
that
up,
too,
pack it in, don't ever draft quarterbacks that can throw a football ever again, and
bring back the wishbone.
Yeah, just do that. Play,
super
play wishbone. Play wishbone or wing T if you can't get it done to 4,000 yards as an organization with Ben Johnson coaching Caleb Williams and having receivers like DJ Moore and Rome Odunze and now Colston Loveland at tight end as well.
He looked good, by the way, in that game against Miami.
All the more reason.
I would say to a certain extent, if I can say he looked good in a preseason game, they targeted him a lot to start that game.
But at that point, if you can't get to 4K, pack it up.
So
as an organization, pack it up.
So the other guy that
you're never doing
to 4K was Jay Cutler. The year before he gets to Chicago, he's in Denver, throws for 4,500 yards, and he gets to Chicago and never reaches that, even close to that milestone ever again.
It's like they have a problem there. Yeah. I don't know what the problem is. I can't explain it. At this point, it's far more unexplainable than like the Bills against the Chiefs in the playoffs or the Leafs in Game 7s. There's something far less explainable about the Bears never having a 4,000-yard passer in their entire franchise history when they are, if I'm not mistaken, one of the oldest, if not the oldest NFL franchise.
They're one of them. They're one of them. Yeah, they've just never.
You can't get it with this combination. Pack it up. Run triple option. Embrace your destiny.
Problem is, too, like, this is my last thing on Chicago, but from what I've seen from the outside looking in, they've really embraced the 85 team. And like it has almost allowed them to like build the identity of we don't need an offense. We just need a defense. Like we'll build through later on with Brian Urlacher and stuff like that.
Cool. You've been to one Super Bowl since then.
Yeah. And ultimately, the problem is, though, with that defense, it's the 06 defense, which was great and was like in some statistics equal to the 85 team. The 86 team is ultimately better in terms of statistical numbers, but 85 wins the Super Bowl. But it almost has built-in bad habits of, yeah, the Super Bowls they've made, it's been because of these great defenses that they've built. So you can only get so far, I guess, with some fans of like, well, you did win that way. But then you also look at the teams that have been in the division. Like, why is Green Bay still successful? Like, they're the smallest market team. They really load up on offense. They've always cared about the quarterback position in the modern era with Favre, with Rodgers, and then with now Jordan Love. They've always cared about wide receivers and having multiple of them. They've done that forever. The Favre era had his receivers, Rodgers had his, and now Love, they just are giving him a ton of them. They just all can't stay healthy. That's their biggest problem. But they went back to the well this year with Matthew Golden. It kind of feels like, to the listener's point, if they can't do it now with Ben Johnson, you kind of start to wonder when. And to be fair, the real answer is it's when they win five games and they're behind all the time and a quarterback has to throw the ball like Blake Bortles did a few years ago with Jacksonville.
They've had plenty
like
of those seasons.
That's what it'll be.
They've had plenty of those seasons. Still didn't happen.
It still doesn't happen, but that's, I think, the most logical destination is that's when it does happen. But more to that game and on the Bills side of things, We did kind of mention with Sal earlier on in the show, kind of guys to keep an eye on. And we mentioned a little bit, I know for me especially, it's the defensive line. Register a sack. It's more splash plays from the individuals. But I do want to mention Tyrell Shavers. He was a guy that missed practice yesterday with I don't know what injury, but he did miss yesterday along with Elijah Moore and a few other guys. But Shavers has become so interesting to me because of the everyone eats offense. And I think that even goes to the entire offense when you even look at the running back room with the fact that they have Ty Johnson as their third down back and Ray Davis is a part of it and, of course, James right. Cook. I think that goes to everybody. And so on that point, I think if Tyrell Shavers can continue this steady climb that he's been on, it's not like he has to pop off and do anything crazy. He doesn't have to go into a preseason game and have seven catches for 125 yards and two touchdowns. It's not – he doesn't need to do that. It'd be great if he did.
You get 50 to 60 in a preseason game when you're not getting all the snaps. That's typically great. A good day.
And he's just become somebody I'm constantly watching for number 80 because of kind of the love a lot of media members had for him last year. And the sort of build-up for him. And now this year, it really feels like, man, if they don't keep him, he's getting poached immediately. That he'll go on the practice squad. And essentially when you do that, you're waving goodbye. That he's leaving. And I can look at a number of teams that maybe could love a Tyrell Shavers. Vegas really doesn't have much past Brock Bowers. San Francisco has a lot of injuries, including the big guys like Ayuk, who Kyle Shanahan said they're hopeful is back by week 6.
Considering his camp and the start to his preseason, I don't know if Tyrell Shavers is on the cut line.
No, he may not be at all. For me, I like watching him play.
He might
more.
Be forcing somebody else there, though.
Yeah. And that's where you do wonder, is the team going to push maybe, hey, Curtis Samuel, you're starting the year on IR. I think that is.
You only have
I'm not
two,
saying it's definitively going to happen. I am sort of waiting on that, though.
You also only have two of those that you can have to return.
Mm-hmm.
On IR, so you might be saying you're just not playing this year.
Yeah, you're just done.
At that point. The other portion to this is Laviska Shenault. Sal mentioned him as right. a player to look out for. If Shenault does well in the return game, because I don't think they got enough opportunities to really get anyone to separate from each other,
mm-hmm.
I think that there's going to be something there of if Shenault can play the way that he did, even as a receiver on Saturday, you have a chance to further take a Curtis Samuel or an Elijah Moore, who hasn't really done much when it comes to matching the hype that he had in the preseason or in the offseason.
But to Sal's point, too, he was open, and at least the coaching staff will look
that's
at that.
That's a win on tape. We said that yep. after that game. But this is, can Shenault challenge? Can Hamler challenge? And for a player whose availability really has been put into question, not just here in Buffalo, but his whole career, can you, as the Bills, find a way to do a pick swap? You get him off the roster, you save your cap space,
mm-hmm.
and it's being pondered because of players like Shavers or Shenault.
803-0550, the number to call. Sabres Live coming up at 12 o'clock. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here with you on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone. Quick final segment here as we wrap up Thursday on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, which is, of course, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, hanging with you here. No Bills practice today as the team is traveling to Chicago for a joint practice tomorrow morning. There was also something from last night. We haven't touched on it yet. I don't know if I'm planning on watching it, but I know a lot of people are.
Yep.
The New Heights podcast episode featuring Taylor Swift joining Jason and Travis Kelce. I saw a few of the clips. I know Bills Mafia was mentioned. I know Josh Allen was mentioned.
Bills Mafia was mentioned in a positive manner, mind
you. Were they? Okay. I was going to say, like, all I know is that happened. I have not watched it. I know it's about 2 hours.
From that clip, Taylor Swift is at the game recognizes game portion.
Oh, okay, cool.
She mentioned she wanted to jump through a table on fire.
Really?
Tip of the cap.
Did she actually say that?
She says that.
I might have to watch this.
Yeah.
I'm not a Taylor Swift hater or anything like that. It's just I don't really watch the New
Heights
podcast.
I don't understand the hate, but I do think that, like, I don't understand why there's hate. I'm not a Taylor Swift aficionado.
Mm-hmm.
The clip may have been out of context.
No!
Oh.
The direct quote is, one of the first things I saw you say was you say to Kylie in reference to Jason Kelce,
mm-hmm.
quote, I was just shotgunning beers with the Bills Mafia and I really want to go through one of those fire tables.
Oh, so it wasn't her.
Maybe eventually she says,
That's me reading the quote.
I'm going to have to watch this.
You have to, like, maybe listen to the whole thing.
But it sounds like that might have been Jason Kelce wants to go through the fire table.
Seeing Jason Kelce for the first time saying, I want to go through a flaming table.
It's a hell of a first introduction, by the way.
Yeah.
It's a crazy introduction,
but
number one.
There's no, from what I know, there's no derogatory slander against Bills Mafia or Buffalo in the slightest, though, either. So, hey, you know what? I'll take that. Game respects.
I know at least 4 hours ago, 8.7 million people have already watched it. That is insane numbers.
That is.
It's in the first 12 hours.
You have an insane popularity weapon that you didn't really even need to unleash.
Yeah,
it's a good podcast between the Kelce brothers in the first place.
I think I might have to watch this.
And now you're like, hey, we have this thing in our back pocket that
why don't we just use. Now this thing, you can't use it all the time. You can't use it all the time, right?
But
eventually she'll just become a character.
She also announces a new album on the show. Mm-hmm. So it does become a little bit of a help for everybody involved.
Oh, of course.
If this is going to hilariously boost their podcast numbers, and she got to announce an album on her boyfriend's podcast.
I think I got 2 hours today. I think I'm going to watch it. I just want to see how this goes. That's going to do it for me and Derek. Coming up after a quick timeout, some hockey talk with the boys. Sabres Live. That'll come after this timeout. You're listening to WGR.